William Henry Harrison, from Wikipedia, the Free Encyclopedia. William Henry Harrison, Sr., February 9, 1773 to April 4, 1841, was a United States military officer and politician who served as the 9th President of the United States in 1841. He died of typhoid fever 31 days into his term, the shortest tenure to date, becoming the first U.S. President to die in office. His death sparked a brief constitutional crisis regarding succession to the presidency, as the U.S. Constitution was unclear as to whether Vice President John Tyler should assume the office of president or merely execute the duties of the vacant office. Tyler claimed a constitutional mandate to carry out the full powers and duties of the presidency and took the presidential oath of office, setting an important precedent for an orderly transfer of presidential power when a president leaves office intra-term. Harrison was the son of Founding Father Benjamin Harrison V and the paternal grandfather of Benjamin Harrison, the 23rd President of the United States. He was the last president born as a British royal subject in the 13 colonies before the start of the Revolutionary War in 1775. During his early military career, Harrison participated in the 1794 Battle of Fallen Timbers, an American military victory that effectively ended the Northwest Indian War. Later, he led a military force against Tecumseh's Confederacy at the Battle of Tippecanoe in 1811, where he earned the nickname Old Tippecanoe. He was promoted to Major General in the regular United States Army in the subsequent War of 1812, and in 1813 led American infantry and cavalry at the Battle of the Thames in Upper Canada. Harrison's sojourn into national politics began in 1799, when he was elected delegate to the U.S. House of Representatives from the Northwest Territory. 2 years later, President John Adams named him governor of the newly established Indiana Territory, a post he held until 1812. After the War of 1812, Harrison moved to Ohio, where he was elected in 1816 to represent the state's first district in the House. In 1824, the state legislature elected him to the United States Senate. His term was truncated by his opponent as Minister Plenipotentiary to Gran Colombia in May 1828. Afterward, Harrison returned to private life in Ohio until he was nominated as the Whig Party candidate for president in the 1836 election. He was defeated by Democratic Vice President Martin Van Buren. 4 years later, the party nominated him again, with John Tyler as his running mate. Harrison and Tyler, known famously as Tippecanoe and Tyler II, defeated Van Buren in the 1840 election, becoming the first Whig to win the presidency. At 68 years, 23 days of age at the time of his inauguration, Harrison was the oldest person to have assumed office until Ronald Reagan, aged 69, 349 days, in 1981. Due to his brief tenure, scholars and historians often forego listing him in historical presidential rankings. However, while Harrison's significance in American presidential history is minuscule, he was, according to historian William W. Freeling, the most dominant figure in the evolution of the Northwest Territories into the Upper Midwest today. Section 1, Early Life. Section 1.1, Early Life and Education. William Henry Harrison, the 7th and youngest child of Benjamin Harrison V and Elizabeth Bassett Harrison, was born on February 9, 1773, at Berkeley Plantation, the Harrison family home along the James River in Charles City County, Virginia. He was a member of a prominent political family of English descent whose ancestors had been in Virginia since the 1630s. Harrison was the last U.S. president born as a British subject before the American Revolution. His father was a Virginia planter who served as a delegate to the Continental Congress and who signed the Declaration of Independence. The senior Harrison also served in the Virginia legislature as the 5th governor of Virginia, 1781-84, in the years before and after the American Revolutionary War. William's older brother, Carter Bassett Harrison, represented Virginia in the U.S. House, 1793 through 1799. Harrison was tutored at home until age 14, when he entered Hamden-Sydney College, a Presbyterian college in Virginia. He studied there for 3 years, receiving a classical education that included Latin, Greek, French, logic, and debate. Harrison's Episcopalian father removed him from the college, possibly for religious reasons, and he briefly attended a boys' academy in Southampton County before being transferred to Philadelphia in 1790. He boarded with Robert Morris and entered the University of Pennsylvania, where he studied medicine under Dr. Benjamin Rush. Harrison later told his biographer that he did not enjoy the subject. In the spring of 1791, shortly after he began his medical studies, his father died. When the 18-year-old Harrison, who was left in the guardianship of Morris, discovered that his family's financial situation left him without funds for further schooling, he abandoned medical school in favor of a military career. Section 1.2, Early Military Career. Governor Henry Lee III of Virginia, a friend of Harrison's father, learned of William's situation and persuaded him to join the military. Within 24 hours of meeting Lee, 18-year-old Harrison was commissioned as an ensign in the U.S. Army, 1st Infantry Regiment. He was initially assigned to Fort Washington, the present-day site of Cincinnati, in the Northwest Territory, where the Army was engaged in the ongoing Northwest Indian War. Section 1.2, Early Military Career. Governor Henry Lee III of Virginia, a friend of Harrison's father, learned of William's situation and persuaded him to join the military. Within 24 hours of meeting Lee, 18-year-old Harrison was commissioned as an ensign in the U.S. Army, 1st Infantry Regiment. He was initially assigned to Fort Washington, the present-day site of Cincinnati in the Northwest Territory, where the Army was engaged in the ongoing Northwest Indian War. Harrison was promoted to lieutenant after Major General Mad Anthony Wayne took command of the Western Army in 1792, following a disastrous defeat under Arthur St. Clair, its previous commander. In 1793, he became Wayne's aide-de-camp and learned how to successfully command an army on the American frontier. He participated in Wayne's decisive victory at the Battle of Fallen Timbers on August 20, 1794. Which brought the Northwest Indian War to a successful close. Harrison was a signatory of the Treaty of Grenville, 1795, as witness to Wayne, the principal negotiator for the U.S. Under the terms of the treaty, a coalition of Native Americans ceded a portion of their lands to the federal government that opened two-thirds of present-day Ohio to settlement by European Americans. Following his mother's death in 1793, Harrison inherited a portion of his family's Virginia estate, including approximately 3,000 acres of land and several slaves. Harrison, who was serving in the Army at the time, sold his land to his brother. Section 1.3, Marriage and Family. In 1795, at age 22, Harrison met Annual Tuthill Symes of North Bend, Ohio. She was a daughter of Anna Tuthill and Judge John Cleves Symes, who served as a colonel in the American Revolutionary War, as representative to the Congress of the Confederation, and became a prominent figure in Ohio. Harrison asked the judge for permission to marry Anna, but was refused. The pair waited until Symes left on business, eloped, and were married on November 25, 1795, at the North Bend home of Dr. Stephen Wood, Treasury of the Northwest Territory. The couple honeymooned at Fort Washington since Harrison was still on military duty. 2 weeks later, at a farewell dinner for General Wayne, Judge Symes confronted his new son-in-law for the first time since the wedding, sternly demanding to know how Harrison intended to support a family. Harrison responded, "By my sword and my own right arm, sir." Afterward, still concerned about Harrison's ability to provide for Anna, Judge Symes sold the young couple 160 acres of land in North Bend. Symes did not come to accept Harrison until he had achieved fame on the battlefield. William and Anna Harrison had 10 children, Elizabeth Bassett, John Cleves Symes, Lucy Singleton, William Henry, John Scott, father of future U.S. President Benjamin Harrison, Benjamin, Mary Symes, Carter Bassett, Anna Tuthill, James Findlay. Anna, who was frequently in poor health during the marriage, partly due to her many pregnancies, outlived William by 23 years. She died on February 25, 1864, at age 88. Section 2. Political Career. Harrison began his political career when he resigned from the military effective June 1, 1798, and campaigned among his friends and family for a post in the Northwest Territorial Government. With the aid of his close friend Timothy Pickering, who was serving as U.S. Secretary of State, Harrison received a recommendation to replace Winthrop Sargent, an outgoing territorial secretary. President John Adams appointed Harrison to the position in July 1798. Harrison frequently served as acting territorial governor during the absences of the governor Arthur St. Clair. Section 2.1, U.S. Congress. Section 2, Political Career. Harrison began his political career when he resigned from the military effective June 1, 1798, and campaigned among his friends and family for a post in the Northwest Territorial Government. With the aid of his close friend Timothy Pickering, who was serving as U.S. Secretary of State, Harrison received a recommendation to replace Winthrop Sargent, the outgoing territorial secretary. President John Adams appointed Harrison to the position in July 1798. Harrison frequently served as acting territorial governor during the absences of Governor Arthur St. Clair. Section 2.1, U.S. Congress. Harrison had many friends in the Eastern aristocracy and quickly gained a reputation among them as a frontier leader. He ran a successful horse breeding enterprise that won him acclaim throughout the Northwest Territory. Harrison became a champion of lower land prices, a primary concern of settlers in the territory at the time. The U.S. Congress had legislated a territorial land policy that led to high land costs, which many of the territory's residents disliked. In October 1799, after it had been determined that the Northwest Territory's population had reached a sufficient number to have a delegate in the U.S. Congress, Harrison ran for election. He campaigned to encourage further migration to the territory, which eventually led to statehood. In 1798, at age 26, Harrison defeated Arthur St. Clair, Jr., the son of the territorial governor, by one vote to become the Northwest Territory's first congressional delegate, and served in the 6th United States Congress from March 4, 1799 to May 14, 1800. As the Northwest Territory's delegate to Congress, he had no authority to vote on legislative bills, but he was permitted to serve on a committee, submit legislation, and engage in debate. Harrison became chairman of the Committee on Public Lands and successfully promoted passage of the Land Act of 1800, which made it easier to buy land in the Northwest Territory in smaller tracts at a low cost. The sale price for public lands was set at $2 per acre. This became an important contributor to rapid population growth of the Northwest Territory. Harrison also served on the committee that decided how to divide the Northwest Territory into smaller sections. The committee recommended splitting the territory into two segments. The eastern section, which continued to be known as the Northwest Territory, comprised the present-day state of Ohio and eastern Michigan. The western section was named the Indiana Territory and consisted of the present-day states of Indiana, Illinois, Wisconsin, a portion of western Michigan, and the eastern portion of Minnesota. Harrison also served on the committee that decided how to divide the Northwest Territory into smaller sections. The committee recommended splitting the territory into two segments. The eastern section, which continued to be known as the Northwest Territory, comprised the present-day state of Ohio and eastern Michigan. The western section was named the Indiana Territory and consisted of the present-day states of Indiana, Illinois, Wisconsin, a portion of western Michigan, and the eastern portion of Minnesota. The two new territories were formally established in 1800, following the passage of 2 Stat 58. On May 13, 1800, President John Adams appointed Harrison as the governor of the newly established Indiana Territory, based on his ties to the West and seemingly neutral political stances. Harrison, caught unaware, was reluctant to accept the position until he received assurances from the Jeffersonians that he would not be removed from office after they gained power in the upcoming elections. After Harrison's governorship was confirmed by the U.S. Senate, he resigned from Congress to become the first Indiana Territorial Governor in 1801. Section 2.2, Indiana Territorial Governor. Harrison arrived at Vincennes, the capital of the newly established Indiana Territory, on January 10, 1801, to begin his duties. U.S. Presidents Thomas Jefferson and James Madison, both of whom were members of the Democratic-Republican Party, reappointed Harrison as the Indiana Territorial Governor in 1803, 1806, and 1809. Harrison was among the few Federalist appointees to so retain his post. On December 28, 1812, Harrison resigned his position as territorial governor to continue his military career during the War of 1812. In 1804, while serving as the Indiana Territorial Governor, Harrison was assigned additional duties to administer the civilian government of the District of Louisiana, a portion of the Louisiana Territory that included land north of the 33 parallel. In October 1804, when a civilian government went into effect, Harrison served as the Louisiana District's executive leader. Harrison administered the district affairs for 5 weeks until the Louisiana Territory was formally established, effective July 4, 1805, and Brigadier General James Wilkinson assumed the duties of the Louisiana Territorial Governor. In 1805, Harrison built a plantation-style home near Vincennes that he named Grouseland, alluding to the birds on the property. The 13-room home was one of the first brick structures in the territory. In addition to his duties as territorial governor, Harrison founded Jefferson University at Vincennes in 1801. The school was incorporated as Vincennes University on November 29, 1806, and is one of two colleges founded by a U.S. president. The other is University of Virginia, founded by Thomas Jefferson. Governor Harrison had wide-ranging powers in the new territory, including the authority to appoint territorial officers and the legislature, as well as the authority to divide the territory into smaller political districts and counties. One of his primary responsibilities was to obtain title to Indian lands that would allow future settlement and increase the territory's population, a requirement for statehood. Harrison was eager to expand the territory for personal reasons as well. His political fortunes were tied to Indiana's eventual statehood. On February 8, 1803, when President Jefferson reappointed Harrison as the Indiana Territorial Governor, he also granted Harrison the authority to negotiate and conclude treaties with the Indians. Between 1803 and 1809, Harrison supervised 11 treaties with Indian leaders that provided the federal government with large tracts of land, more than 60 million acres, that included the southern tip of present-day Indiana and most of present-day Illinois for further settlement. The 1804 Treaty of St. Louis was quashquamay required by Sauk and Meksaki tribes to cede much of western Illinois and parts of Missouri to the federal government. Many of the Sauk, especially Black Hawk, greatly resented this treaty and the loss of lands, a primary reason the Sauk sided with the United Kingdom during the War of 1812. Harrison thought the Treaty of Grouseland appeased some of the Indians, but tensions remained high along the frontier. The Treaty of Fort Wayne raised new tensions when Harrison purchased land from the Miami tribe, who claimed ownership of the land, more than 2.5 million acres of land inhabited by the Shawnee, Kickapoo, Wea, and Piankasha peoples. Harrison rushed the treaty process by offering large subsidies to the tribes and their leaders so that the treaty would be enforced before President Jefferson left office and the administration changed. Although Harrison's pro-slavery position made him unpopular with the Indiana Territory's anti-slavery supporters, he used his political power to make several attempts to introduce slavery into the territory. His efforts were ultimately unsuccessful due to the territory's growing anti-slavery movement. In 1803, Harrison lobbied Congress to vote in favor of a petition to suspend Article 6 of the Northwest Ordinance for 10 years, a move that would allow slavery in the Indiana Territory. At the end of the suspension period, citizens in the territory covered under the ordinance could decide for themselves whether to permit slavery. Harrison claimed the suspension was necessary to encourage settlement and would make the territory economically viable, but Congress rejected the idea. In 1803 and 1805, Harrison and the appointed territorial judges enacted territorial laws that evaded the provisions outlined in Article 6 of the ordinance, authorized indentures, allowed slaves to be brought into the territory, and gave their masters authority to determine the length of indentured servitude. The pro-slavery laws caused a significant stir in the territory. In 1809, after the separation of the western portion of the Indiana Territory to create the Illinois Territory, elections were held to select members of territorial legislatures' upper and lower houses for the first time. Previously, lower house members were elected, but the territorial governor appointed members of the upper house. Harrison found himself at odds with the legislature after the anti-slavery faction came to power, and the eastern portion of the Indiana Territory grew to include a large anti-slavery population. When the Indiana Territory's General Assembly convened in 1810, its anti-slavery faction immediately repealed the indenturing laws enacted in 1803 and in 1805. After 1809, Harrison's political authority declined as the Indiana Territorial Legislature assured more authority and the territory advanced toward statehood. By 1812, Harrison had moved away and resumed his military career. President Jefferson, the primary author of the Northwest Ordinance, had made a secret compact with James Lemon to defeat the pro-slavery movement led by Harrison. Although he was a slave owner, Jefferson did not want slavery to expand into the Northwest Territory, as he believed the institution should eventually end. Under the Jefferson-Lemon Compact, Jefferson donated money to Lemon to found churches in Illinois and Indiana to stop the pro-slavery movement. In Indiana, the founding of an anti-slavery church led to citizens signing a petition and organizing politically to defeat Harrison's efforts to legalize slavery in the territory. Jefferson and Lemon were both instrumental in defeating Harrison's attempts in 1805 and 1807 to secure approval to expand slavery in the territory. Section 3, Army General. Section 3.1, Tecumseh and Tippecanoe. An Indian resistant movement against U.S. expansion had been growing through the leadership of the Shawnee brothers, Tecumseh and Texawada, the prophet. The conflict became known as Tecumseh's War. Texawada convinced the native tribes that they would be protected by the Great Spirit, and no harm could befall them if they would rise up against the white settlers. He encouraged resistance by telling the tribes to pay white traders only half of what they owed, and to give up all the white man's ways, including their clothing, muskets, and especially whiskey, which was becoming known as evil for American Indians. In 1810, Tecumseh led 400 armed warriors down the Wabash River to meet with Harrison and Vincennes. As the warriors were dressed in war paint, their sudden appearance at first frightened the soldiers at Vincennes. The leaders of the group were escorted to Grouseland, where they met Harrison. In August 1810, Tecumseh led 400 armed warriors down the Wabash River to meet with Harrison and Vincennes. As the warriors were dressed in war paint, their sudden appearance at first frightened the soldiers at Vincennes. The leaders of the group were escorted to Grouseland, where they met Harrison. Tecumseh insisted that the Fort Wayne Treaty was illegitimate. He argued that no one tribe could sell land without the approval of other tribes. He asked Harrison to nullify it and warned that Americans should not attempt to settle the land sold in the treaty. Tecumseh informed Harrison that he had threatened to kill the chiefs who signed the treaty if they carried out its terms, and that his confederation of tribes was growing rapidly. Harrison said the Miami were the owners of the land and could sell it if they so chose. He rejected Tecumseh's claim that all the Indians formed one nation. He said each tribe could have separate relations with the United States if they chose to. Harrison argued that the Great Spirit would have made all the tribes speak one language if they were to be one nation. Tecumseh launched an impassioned rebuttal, but Harrison was unable to understand his language. A Shawnee friendly to Harrison cocked his pistol from the sidelines to alert Harrison that Tecumseh's speech was leading to trouble. Some witnesses reported that Tecumseh was encouraging the warriors to kill Harrison. Many of the warriors began to pull their weapons, representing a substantial threat to Harrison and the town, which held a population of only 1,000. Harrison pulled his sword. Tecumseh's warriors backed down after the officers had pulled their firearms in defense of Harrison. Chief Winnemac, who was friendly to Harrison, countered Tecumseh's arguments and told the warriors that since they had come in peace, they should return home in peace. Before leaving, Tecumseh informed Harrison that unless the treaty was nullified, he would seek an alliance with the British. After the meeting, Tecumseh journeyed to meet with many of the tribes in the region, hoping to create a confederation to battle the United States. In 1811, while Tecumseh was traveling, Harrison was authorized by Secretary of War William Eustis to march against the nascent Confederation as a show of force. Harrison led an army of more than 1,000 men north to intimidate the Shawnee into making peace. Instead, the tribes launched a surprise attack on Harrison's army early on November 7th in what became known as the Battle of Tippecanoe. Harrison defeated the tribal forces at Prophetstown, next to the Wabash and Tippecanoe Rivers. Harrison was hailed as a national hero, and the battle became famous. However, his troops had greatly outnumbered the attackers and suffered many more casualties during the battle. When reporting to Secretary Eustis, Harrison informed him the battle occurred near the Tippecanoe River, which led to its naming, and he feared an imminent reprisal attack. The first dispatch did not make clear which side had won the conflict, and the secretary at first interpreted it as a defeat. The follow-up dispatch made the U.S. victory clear. When no second attack came, the defeat of the Shawnee was more certain. Eustis demanded to know why Harrison had not taken adequate precautions in fortifying his camp against attacks. Harrison countered by saying he had considered the position strong enough. The dispute was the catalyst of a disagreement between Harrison and the Department of War that continued into the War of 1812. The press did not cover the battle at first, and one Ohio paper misinterpreted Harrison's dispatch to Eustis to mean he was defeated. By December, as most major American papers carried stories on the battle, public outrage over the Shawnee attack grew. At a time of high tensions with the United Kingdom, many Americans blamed the British for inciting the tribes to violence and supplying them with firearms. In response, Congress passed resolutions condemning the British for interfering in American domestic affairs. A few months later, on June 18, 1812, the U.S. government declared war against the United Kingdom. Shortly thereafter, Harrison left Vincennes to seek a military appointment. Section 3.2, War of 1812. The outbreak of war with the British in 1812 led to continued conflict with Indians in the Northwest. Harrison briefly served as a major general in the Kentucky militia until the U.S. government commissioned him to command the Army of the Northwest on September 17, 1812. Although Harrison received federal military pay for his service, he also collected a territorial governor's salary from September until December 28, 1812, when he formally resigned as governor and continued his military service. After the American defeat in the Siege of Detroit, General James Winchester, who became the commander of the Army of the Northwest, offered Harrison the rank of Brigadier General. Harrison also wanted sole command of the Army. In September 1812, after President James Madison removed Winchester from command, Harrison became commander of the fresh recruits. Initially, the British and their Indian allies greatly outnumbered Harrison's troops. During the War of 1812-13, Harrison constructed a defensive position along the Maumee River in northwest Ohio and named it Fort Meigs in honor of the Ohio governor, Returned J. Meigs, Jr. After receiving reinforcements in 1813, Harrison took the offensive and led the army north to battle the Shawnee and their British allies. Harrison won victories in the Indiana Territory and in Ohio and recaptured Detroit before invading Upper Canada, present-day Ontario. Harrison's army defeated the British on October 5, 1813, at the Battle of the Thames, in which Tecumseh was killed. This pivotal battle is considered to be one of the great American victories in the war, second only to the Battle of New Orleans. In 1814, U.S. Secretary of War John Armstrong divided the command of the army, assigning Harrison to a backwater post and giving control of the front to one of Harrison's subordinates. Armstrong and Harrison had disagreed over the lack of coordination and effectiveness in the invasion of Canada. In May, following Harrison's reassignment, he resigned from the army. His resignation was accepted later that summer. After the war ended, Congress investigated Harrison's resignation and determined that Armstrong had mistreated him during his military campaign and that his resignation was justified. Congress awarded Harrison a gold medal for his services during the War of 1812. Following the defeat of the British and their Indian allies in western Canada, Harrison and Lewis Cass, governor of the Michigan Territory, were delegated the responsibility for negotiating a peace treaty with the Indians, known as the Treaty of Grenville. In June 1815, at President Madison's request, the U.S. government appointed Harrison to serve as one of the commissioners responsible for negotiating a second post-war treaty with the Indians that became known as the Treaty of Spring Wells. Both treaties were advantageous to the United States. In the Spring Wells Treaty, the tribe ceded a large tract of land in the West, providing additional land for American purchase and settlement. Section 4, Post-War Life. Section 4.1, Public Office. After John Gibson replaced Harrison as Indiana Territorial Governor in 1812 and Harrison's resignation from the Army in 1814, he returned to his family in North Bend. Harrison cultivated his land and enlarged the log cabin farmhouse, but he soon returned to public life. In 1816, Harrison was elected to complete the term of John McLean of Ohio in the U.S. House of Representatives, where Harrison represented the state from October 8, 1816 to March 3, 1819. In 1817, Harrison declined to serve as Secretary of War under President Monroe. In 1819, he was elected to the Ohio State Senate and served until 1821, having lost the election for Ohio governor in 1820. In 1822, he ran for a seat in the U.S. House, but lost by 500 votes to James W. Gaisley. In 1824, Harrison was elected to the U.S. Senate, where he served until May 20, 1828. Fellow Westerners in Congress called Harrison a Buckeye, a term of affection related to the native Ohio Buckeye tree. He was an Ohio presidential elector in 1820 for James Monroe and for Henry Clay in 1824. Appointed in 1828 as Minister Plenipotentiary for Grand Columbia, Harrison resigned from Congress and served in his new post until March 8, 1829. He arrived in Bogota on December 22, 1828, and found the condition of Columbia saddening. Harrison reported to the Secretary of State that the country was on the edge of anarchy, including his opinion that Simón Bolívar was about to become a military dictator. While minister in Colombia, Harrison wrote a rebuke to Bolívar, stating, "The strongest of all governments is that which is most free." He called on Bolívar to encourage the development of democracy. In response, Bolívar wrote, "The United States seemed destined by Providence to plague America with torments in the name of freedom," a sentiment that achieved fame in Latin America. When the new administration of President Andrew Jackson took office in March 1829, Harrison was recalled so the new president could make his own appointment to the position. He returned to the United States in June. Section 4.2, Private Citizen. After Harrison returned to the United States from Columbia, he settled on his farm in North Bend, Ohio, his adopted home state, living in relative retirement after nearly four decades of government service. Having accumulated no substantial wealth during his lifetime, he subsisted on his savings, a small pension, and the income produced by his farm. Harrison cultivated corn and established a distillery to produce whiskey. After a brief time in the liquor business, he became disturbed by the effects of alcohol on its consumers and closed the distillery. In a later address to the Hamilton County Agricultural Board in 1831, Harrison said he had sinned in making whiskey and hoped that others would learn from his mistake and stop the production of liquors. In these early years, Harrison also earned money from his contributions to a biographer written by James Hall, entitled A Memoir of the Public Services of William Henry Harrison, published in 1836. That year, he made an unsuccessful run for the presidency as a Whig candidate. Between 1836 and 1840, Harrison served as clerk of courts for Hamilton County. This was his job when he was elected president in 1840. About this time, Harrison met African-American abolitionist and Underground Railroad conductor George DeBaptiste, who lived in nearby Madison. The two became friends, and De Baptiste became his personal servant, staying with Harrison until his death. By 1840, when Harrison campaigned for president a second time, over a dozen books had been published on his life. He was hailed by many as a national hero. Section 4.3, 1836 Presidential Campaign. Harrison was the Northern Whig candidate for president in 1836, one of only two times in American history when a major political party intentionally ran more than one presidential candidate. The two Democrats ran two candidates in 1860. Vice President Martin Van Buren, the Democratic candidate, was popular and deemed likely to win the election against an individual Whig candidate. The Whig plan was to elect popular Whigs regionally, deny Van Buren the 148 electoral votes needed for election, and force the House of Representatives to decide the election. They hoped the Whigs would control the House after the general elections. This strategy would have failed, as the Democrats retained a majority in the House following the election. Harrison ran in all the free states except Massachusetts and the slave states of Delaware, Maryland, and Kentucky. Hugh L. White ran in the remaining slave states except for South Carolina. Daniel Webster ran in Massachusetts and Willie P. Magnum in South Carolina. The plan narrowly failed as Van Buren won the election with 170 electoral votes. A swing of just over 4,000 votes in Pennsylvania would have given that state's 30 electoral votes to Harrison, and the election would have been decided in the House of Representatives. Section 4.4, 1840 Presidential Campaign. Harrison was the Whig candidate and faced the incumbent Van Buren in the 1840 election. He was chosen over more controversial members of the party, such as Clay and Webster, and based his campaign on his military record and on the weak U.S. economy caused by the Panic of 1837. In a ploy to blame Van Buren for the depressed economy, the Whigs nicknamed the latter Van Ruin. The Democrats ridiculed Harrison by calling him Granny Harrison, the petticoat general, because he resigned from the army before the War of 1812 ended. When asking voters whether Harrison should be elected, the Democrats asked what Harrison's name spelled backwards would be, No Sirrah. They also cast Harrison as a provincial, out-of-touch old man who would rather sit in his log cabin drinking hard cider than attend to the administration of the country. This strategy backfired when Harrison and John Tyler, his vice presidential running mate, adopted the log cabin and hard cider as campaign symbols. Their campaign used the symbols on banners and posters and created bottles of hard cider shaped like log cabins, all to connect the candidates to the common man. Although Harrison had come from a wealthy, slaveholding Virginia family, his campaign promoted him as a humble frontiersman in the style popularized by Andrew Jackson. In contrast, the Whigs presented Van Buren as a wealthy elitist. A memorable example was the Gold Spoon Oration that Pennsylvania's Whig representative, Charles Ogle, delivered in the U.S. House. The speech ridiculed Van Buren's elegant White House lifestyle and lavish spending. A Whig chant in which people would spit tobacco juice as they chanted wort wort also exhibited the difference between candidates from the time of the election. Old Tippy wore a homespun coat and he had no ruffled shirt, wort wort. But Matty has the golden plane, and he's a little squirt, wort wort. The Whigs boasted of Harrison's military record and his reputation as a hero of the Battle of Tippecanoe. The campaign slogan, Tippecanoe and Tyler Too, became one of the most famous in American politics. Harrison won a landslide victory in the Electoral College, 234 electoral votes to Van Buren's 60, although the popular vote was much closer. Harrison received 53% of the popular vote to Van Buren's 47%, with a margin of less than 150,000 votes. Section 5, Presidency, 1841. Section 5.1, Shortest Presidency. Harrison's wife, Anna Harrison, was too ill to travel when her husband left Ohio for his inauguration, and she decided not to accompany him to Washington. Harrison asked his daughter-in-law, Jane Irwin Harrison, widow of his namesake son, to accompany him and act as hostess until Anna's proposed arrival in May. When Harrison came to Washington, he wanted to show that he was still the steadfast hero of Tippecanoe, and that he was a better educated and thoughtful man than the backwoods character portrayed in the campaign. He took the oath of office on Thursday, March 4th, 1841, a cold and wet day. He wore neither an overcoat nor hat, rode on horseback to the ceremony rather than in the closed carriage that had been offered him, and delivered the longest inaugural address in American history. At 8,445 words, it took him nearly 2 hours to read, although his friend and fellow Whig Daniel Webster had edited it for length. After becoming the first head of state to have his photograph taken, Harrison then rode through the streets in the inaugural parade, and that evening attended three inaugural balls, including one at Carusi's Saloon, entitled the Tippecanoe Ball, which had a price of $10 per person, equivalent to $243 in 2018, attracted 1,000 guests. The inaugural address was a detailed statement of the Whig agenda, essentially a repudiation of Jackson's and Van Buren's policies. Harrison promised to reestablish the Bank of the United States and extend its capacity for credit by issuing paper currency, Henry Clay's American system, to defer the judgment of Congress on legislative matters, with sparing use of its veto power, and to reverse Jackson's spoils system of executive patronage. He promised to use patronage to create a qualified staff, not to enhance his own standing in government. As leader of the Whigs and a powerful legislator, as well as a frustrated presidential candidate in his own right, Henry Clay expected to have substantial influence in the Harrison administration. He ignored his own platform plank of overturning the spoils system. Clay attempted to influence Harrison's actions before and during his brief presidency, especially in putting forth his own preferences for cabinet offices and other presidential appointments. Harrison rebuffed his aggression, saying, "Mr. Clay, you forget that I am the president." The dispute intensified when Harrison named Daniel Webster, Clay's arch-rival for control of the Whig Party, as his Secretary of State, and appeared to give Webster's supporters some highly coveted patronage positions. Harrison's sole concession to Clay was to name his protege, John J. Crittenden, to the post of Attorney General. Despite this, the dispute continued until the president's death. Clay was not the only one who hoped to benefit from Harrison's election. Hordes of office applicants came to the White House, which was then open to all who wanted a meeting with the president. Most of Harrison's businesses during his month-long president involved extensive social obligations, an inevitable part of his high position and arrival in Washington, and receiving visitors of the White House. They awaited him at all hours and filled the executive mansion. Harrison wrote in a letter dated March 10th, "I am so much harassed by the multitude that calls upon me that I can give no proper attention to any business of my own." Nevertheless, Harrison sent a number of nominations for office to the Senate for confirmation during his month in office. The new 27th Congress had convened an extraordinary session for the purpose of confirming Harrison's cabinet and other important nominees, since a number of them arrived after Congress's March 15th adjournment. However, John Tyler would ultimately be forced to re-nominate many of Harrison's selections. Harrison took his pledge to reform executive appointments seriously, visiting each of the six executive departments to observe its operations and issuing through Webster an order to all departments that electioneering by employees would henceforth be considered grounds for dismissal. As he had with Clay, Harrison resisted pressure from other Whigs over partisan patronage. When a group arrived in his office on March 16th to demand the removal of all Democrats from any appointed office, Harrison proclaimed, "So help me God, I will resign my office before I can be guilty of such an iniquity." Harrison's own cabinet attempted to countermand the president's appointment of John Chambers as governor of Iowa in favor of Webster's friend, General James Wilson. When Webster attempted to press this decision at a March 25th cabinet meeting, however, Harrison asked him to read aloud a handwritten note, which said simply, "William Henry Harrison, President of the United States," then announced that "William Henry Harrison, President of the United States, tells you, gentlemen, that by God, John Chambers shall be governor of Iowa." Harrison's only official act of consequence was to call Congress into a special session. Henry Clay and he had disagreed over the necessity of such a session, and when on March 11th Harrison's cabinet proved evenly divided, the president vetoed the idea. When Clay pressed Harrison on the special session on March 13th, the president rebuffed his counsel and told him not to visit the White House again, but to address him only in writing. A few days later, however, Treasury Secretary Thomas Ewing reported to Harrison that federal funds were in such trouble that the government could not continue to operate until Congress's regularly scheduled session in December. Harrison thus relented, and on March 17th proclaimed the special session in the interest of the condition of the revenue and finance of the country. Had Harrison lived, the session would have began on May 31st as scheduled. Section 6. Death and Funeral. On March 26, 1841, Harrison became ill with a cold after being caught in a torrential downpour without cover. His symptoms grew progressively worse over the ensuing 2 days, at which time a team of doctors was called in to treat him. The prevailing misconception at the time was that his illness had been caused by the bad weather at his inauguration 3 weeks earlier. After making a diagnosis of right lower lobe pneumonia, they proceeded to place heated suction cups on his bare torso and to administer a series of bloodlettings, supposedly draw out the disease. When those precautions failed to bring about improvement, the doctors treated him with ipecac, castor oil, calomel, and finally with a boiled mixture of crude petroleum and Virginia snake root. All this only weakened Harrison further. Initially, no official announcement was made concerning Harrison's illness, which, the longer that he remained out of public view, fueled public speculation and concern. By the end of the month, large crowds were gathering outside the White House, holding vigil while awaiting any news about the president's condition. On April 4, 1841, 9 days after becoming ill, and exactly 1 month after taking the oath of office, Harrison was dead, the first U.S. president to die in office. A medical analysis made in 2014, based on Dr. Miller's notes and records of the White House water supply being downstream of public sewage, concluded that he likely died of septic shock due to enteric fever. His last words to his attending doctor, though assumed to be directed at Vice President John Tyler, were, "Sir, I wish you to understand the true principles of the government. I wish them carried out. I ask nothing more." A 30-day period of mourning commenced following the president's death. Various public ceremonies, modeled after European royal funeral practices, were held. An invitation-only funeral service was also held on April 7th in the East Room of the White House, after which Harrison's coffin was brought to Congressional Cemetery in Washington, D.C., where it was replaced in a temporary receiving vault. Solomon Northup gave an account of the procession in 12 Years a Slave. The next day there was a great pageant in Washington. The roar of cannon and the tolling of bells filled the air, while many houses were shrouded with crepe, and the streets were black with people. As the day advanced, the procession made its appearance, coming slowly through the avenue, carriage after carriage, in long succession, while thousands upon thousands followed on foot, all moving to the sound of melancholy music. They were bearing the dead body of Harrison to the grave. I remember distinctly how the window glass would break and rattle to the ground after each report of the cannon they were firing in the burial ground. That June, Harrison's body was transported by train and river barge to North Bend, Ohio. Then, on July 7, 1841, the nation's 9th president was buried in a family tomb at the summit of Mount Nebo, overlooking the Ohio River, now the William Henry Harrison Tomb State Memorial. Section 6.1. Impact of Death. Harrison's death highlighted an ambiguity in Article 2, Section 1, Clause 6 of the United States Constitution regarding succession to the presidency. Although clearly provided for the vice president to take over the powers and duties of the president in the event of a president's removal, death, resignation, or inability, left unclear was whether the vice president became president of the United States or simply temporarily acted as president in a case of succession. Harrison's cabinet insisted that Tyler was vice president acting as president. Tyler was resolute in his claim to the title of president and in his determination to exercise the full powers of the president. After the cabinet consulted with Chief Justice Roger Taney, it was decided that if Tyler took the presidential oath of office, he would assume the office of president. Tyler obliged and was sworn into office on April 6, 1841. Congress convened in May, and after a short period of debate in both houses, it passed a resolution that confirmed Tyler as president for the remainder of Harrison's term. The precedent he set in 1841 was followed subsequently on seven occasions when an incumbent president died, and was written into the Constitution in 1967 through Section 1 of the 25th Amendment. More generally, Harrison's death was a disappointment to Whigs, who hoped to pass a revenue tariff and enact measures to support Henry Clay's American system. John Tyler, Harrison's successor and a former Democrat, abandoned the Whig agenda, effectively cutting himself off from the party. Also, with Harrison's death, three persons served as president within a single calendar year: Martin Van Buren, Harrison, Tyler. This has only happened on one other occasion, in 1881, when Rutherford B. Hayes, James A. Garfield, and Chester A. Arthur each served. Section 7, Legacy. Section 7.1, Historical Reputation. Among Harrison's most enduring legacies is the series of treaties that he either negotiated or signed with Native American leaders during his tenure as the Indiana Territorial Governor. As part of the treaty negotiations, the Native tribes ceded large tracts of land in the West that provided additional acreage for purchase and settlement. Hamilton's chief presidential legacy lies in his campaigning methods, which laid the foundation for the modern presidential campaign tactics. Harrison was the first incumbent president to have his photograph taken. The image was made in Washington, D.C. on his inaugural day in 1841. Photographs exist of John Quincy Adams, Andrew Jackson, and Martin Van Buren, but these images were taken after they left office. The Harrison image was the first presidential photograph. The original daguerreotype of Harrison on his inauguration has been lost, although at least one early photographic copy exists in the archives of the Metropolitan Museum of Art. Harrison died nearly penniless. Congress voted his wife Anna a presidential widow's pension of $25,000, 1 year of Harrison's salary, equivalent to about $607,000 in 2018. She also received the right to mail letters free of charge. Harrison's son, John Scott Harrison, represented Ohio in the U.S. House of Representatives between 1853 and 1857. Harrison's grandson, Benjamin Harrison of Indiana, served as the 23rd president from 1889 to 1893, making William and Benjamin Harrison the only grandparent-grandchild pair of U.S. presidents. Section 7.2, Honors and Tributes. On February 19, 2009, the U.S. Mint released the ninth coin in the presidential $1 coin program bearing Harrison's likeness. A total of 98,420,000 coins were minted. Several monuments and memorial statues have been erected in a tribute to Harrison. There are public statues of him in downtown Indianapolis, Cincinnati's Piatt Park, the Tippecanoe County Courthouse, Harrison County, Indiana, and Owen County, Indiana. Numerous counties and towns also bear his name.